Hi, Wine Delusters, and in today's episode, I'm speaking to the founders of Italian Wine Tales, Liv and Andrea. Welcome to the Wine Delust podcast. My name is Janine, and my real passion is travel, and my bucket list is to visit every wine region in the world. In this series, we are heading off from Australia and heading to Bella Italia. I'm speaking to wine experts living in Italy, and we'll share my travel tips of visiting wine regions. So pour yourself a glass and let's go exploring. When I was planning my trip to Italy, I devoured the Untold Italy podcast with my previous guest, Katie Clark. Some of my favourite episodes was with Katie speaking with Liv and Andrea. Liv is Australian and she met Andrea, who's Italian, when she was working in Italy. She's been there 5 years now, and together, through their passion for wine, they set up the Italian Wine Tales, a great online resource if you're planning a holiday or if you've got any interest in Italian wine. Please welcome Liv Windsor and Andrea Mitirua from Italian Wine Tales. Welcome to the Wine Delust podcast. Firstly, why don't you tell us about the Italian Wine Tales?
So Italian Wine Tales is an online resource specifically about Italian wine, and it aims to, I guess, educate Australians and Americans and English speakers in general about the world of Italian wine in a fun and approachable way, because obviously wine talk can be a little bit pretentious sometimes, a little bit unapproachable. And then if you add in the language barrier when people travel to Italy, it can all just feel, wow, way too much and a little bit scary. And we love Italian wine and we want people to drink Italian wine. So we want to make it fun and, you know, easy to get into. And we started doing I'd done a sommelier course in Australia before I ever left Australia through Wesset. And then me and Andrea more recently started doing the Italian specific sommelier course here in Rome. And so that's kind of where the idea was born. We always loved wine, but yeah, when we were doing that, we were really getting into Italian wine specifically.
And I saw you had a post about working at vineyards in Italy, which, which I'd seen that post about 20 years ago. So probably many in Milan, and I think I would have preferred working on a vineyard. But is that how you guys met?
No, it would have been a story.
It was right after, though.
It was right after. So
in Turin.
Andrea's from...
I'm from Turin, which is in the northwest. North of Rome and Florence and west of Venice and Milan. She was working in vineyards in Piedmont, in my region, which is full of them, and it's one of the main producers of wine in Italy. And
quality wine, we should say.
Yeah, Barolo, the home of Barolo.
Yeah, exactly. And right after she finished working at the vineyard, she moved to Torino. Was supposed to stay there for a little while.
Yeah, my plan was actually to go back to Umbria, but I ended up finding work in Piedmont and I met Andrea like my second day there. So
it was meant to be. Oh, that's awesome. And then you said you're coming up to 5 years in Italy now.
Yeah, which is crazy. So we've been in Rome for nearly 2 years. And previous to that, the first year I was kind of here, there and everywhere working in vineyards and agriturismi around the country. But then after that was in Turin in Piedmont up north. So, but I wasn't actually working in Barolo land, which is kind of funny. I was working in the Monferrato wine region, which is a lot lesser known. And they produce a lot of indigenous grapes. So I was working at an organic winery that make grapes that you've probably never, I'd certainly never heard of. Like Slarina is one of the grapes that they use. It was probably the most indigenous, and they do lots of projects with the University of Turin, researching these indigenous grapes and trying to bring them, you know, back to life. So it was just so interesting. So I really loved working there.
But can you tell us more about, and now, am I saying this correct? Is it Piedmonte with the accent on the end?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Perfect.
So can you tell us more about the region? Because I know that, isn't Asti come from there? It's like the sweeter bubbles and things. So, and tell us more about the wines you were just talking about. Are they reds or whites?
Well, yeah, it's red wine driven for sure. As you said, the Barolo is the king of wines, the king of Italian wines. The one that is most known is this beautiful full-bodied red wine, which derives from the Nebbiolo grape. The Nebbiolo grape is the most important in the region for sure, because it gives us the Barolo, but it gives us another very important one, which is Barbaresco. And Nebbiolo itself is a wine produced by the Nebbiolo grape, which is absolutely beautiful.
So we kind of like to call the Barolo the king of Italian wines, and Barbaresco is the queen.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, great.
Yeah.
So both wines take the name from two little villages in the same area, in the Le Langhe region, which is a part of, in the southeast part of Piedmont. And as I was saying, they're full-bodied red wine, quite tannic, which is the main characteristic of the Nebbiolo grape. Not too much, but there is a bit of an astringent component into them. And you have this beautiful bouquet of red flowers, like imagine a violet or a rose. You can find hints of tobacco, of leather, a beautiful aftertaste of licorice. It's often associated with the Nebbiolo grape. And it's beautifully paired with important meals such as meat. It's perfect in winter, in fact, and cheeses.
Yeah. So they'd be the most well-known wines in the Langhe area. But then, as you mentioned, Asti as well. So they make sparkling wines in Piedmont. Moscato,
yeah. So it's not really famous for white wines in general, but there are sparkling wines. As you said, and recently there is a white wine that is becoming more and more popular, a white wine which is called Timorasso, which is produced in an area between Le Langhe or where you were working.
It's kind of more towards Monferrato.
Yeah.
So Timorasso is a really delicious white wine that we love. And, you know, when we were in Australia, because we were there just a few months ago, we noticed it a lot on the menus in Australia. So it must be...
Oh, really? In Melbourne,
In Melbourne,
it's getting more for sure.
Yeah, which I found really interesting.
It's quite mineral, and I really like it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Piedmont, as we were saying, is red wine country, as well as the sparkling wine. It's normally a sweet sparkling. However, I think that they do make really delicious white wines as well. You know, this winery that I was working at for the harvest, they were working on one white indigenous grape called Baratuchat, which I think there must be a very, very small amount of wineries using that grape. I'd never heard of it before. Yeah. And again, really mineral whites, the soil there's something magical in Piedmont, because the wines are just incredible.
And are they just put in stainless steel then to sort of keep that minerality, or are they oak sometimes, or are they?
So they never use oak for the white. They use the concrete,
cement actually.
Cement. That's
wow.
And you know, they were the first. Now I've seen quite a few wineries doing that, but they were the first winery. I've never seen that really in Australia.
No, I've seen it in Rioja in Spain, but not. I've not seen it anywhere else. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, really interesting. The winery is called, it's called Cascina Iuli. It's run by a guy, Fabrizio Iuli, who is from Piedmont, he grew up where the winery is, and he took over the production for the family, and his wife is American, and she has just started her own wine label as well, actually. Her name is Summer. So her wines, I'm yet to try them because it's a tiny brand, but she was one of the, she also had a wine importing business into New York of natural European wines. Yeah. And she's opened up a new wine importing business. They're even running a school at the property for kids. It's a cool place.
Can you tell me in Piedmonte, because I didn't get there, if you were to stay in somewhere like Turin, is it easy to do day trips to the different regions, or what would your suggestions be like if you're visiting the region?
Well, if you stay in Turin, it's easy to have a day trip in this Le Langhe region, as I was saying, or Monferrato region.
Langhe is only an hour away.
Oh, it's very close. My suggestion would be to hire a driver. just because, so of course, you can enjoy tasting different wines. Just a reminder, though, that in Italy, when you visit a winery, you cannot just show up. You need to actually book in advance. So keep that in mind and call them. And most of the times in Australia, you can pay meals, like have a lunch with the tasting or stuff. While in Italy, they are more focused solely or mainly on the producing side. So don't expect to also eat lunch, for example, at the winery when you visit.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind and maybe book a restaurant nearby. So as I was saying, you can stay in Turin, but there are also beautiful resorts in the region as well, in the region like of Le Langhe or Monferrato as well, if you want to stay a bit closer.
I think, yeah, you should definitely see Turin and stay a few nights because there's a lot to do and see in Turin. But I love staying in the Langhe wine region. It's just so beautiful. And things are very close together, different again to like Australia or States where, you know, it's super spread out. Like the Langhe, it is so, all the little villages are really close. So you can see a lot while you're there. But I do think it's nice to stay in the wine region. You wake up and see that beautiful view. And Monferrato would be really nice to visit, but that's a little bit further away. Like you, I think you could do a day trip from Turin, but
an hour and a half driving, really.
Yeah.
2 hours maximum.
It's a lot to go there and come back there in one day if you've had a bit of wine.
You waste a bit of time.
So yeah, Monferrato is interesting to visit, I think, because it's definitely not as well known.
Yeah.
And they're producing really delicious wines. So I think if you were really into your wine and you wanted to do something different, you'd also do that. Yeah. Otherwise, I'd probably stay in Langhe.
Yeah, so you could stay in like a couple of little villages if they're a couple of hours away from each other. Yeah.
It would be a good idea. Yeah.
I mean, in Langhe, we love La Mora, which is...
It's where my grandma and part of my family was from. And it's beautiful because it's on a little, on top of a hill. So you have this beautiful, and on a clear day, you have this beautiful view of all the region with all the hills surrounded by vineyards. It's quite magical, really.
Yeah, so we would definitely recommend staying there. I mean, Alba is the other place that a lot of people stay because it's the capital of the Langhe region. However, like, it just depends what you're looking for. If you're staying in Alba, it's a city. It's a small city, but it's still a city, right?
Yeah, don't think of like as a big city. It's still little for Australian standards, but also for Italian standards. Yeah. And beautiful medieval center.
But if you want to be right, you know, in a tiny little town with the rolling vineyards, then you'd stay somewhere more like La Mora, as an example.
No, that's so good to know, because I think often tourists go to the cities, and I try to veer away from that a bit when I was away. But it's hard to know which small towns to choose, and I find that really so that they're fantastic tips. Thank you for that. And you also said that you were thinking of moving back to Umbria. So obviously Umbria, you have a soft spot for. So what's your recommendations there? I went to Montefalco and stayed in Spello for the Brata, which I saw on your Instagram originally, so that's inspired me. What would your suggestions be, and what's your highlights when you go to Umbria?
Well, we love Umbria, and so much so, as a side note, we're actually getting married in Umbria.
Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. We're in Lower Umbria.
But of course, the big discussion is which wines to have. So the Orvieto side, it's much closer, Orvieto, to Rome and to Tuscany.
Yeah.
It's on, you know, that side of the region. So it's all about white wine, the Orvieto Classico. And that's really delicious and mineral as well. Yeah. But then if you go on the other side of Umbria, it's all about red wine. So Sagrantino is, you know, the most important grape from the Montefalco region. So is the home, really, of Umbrian red wines.
Yeah.
Sagrantino can be a difficult grape to approach because it's very tannic.
Yeah. Very.
You know, and they, sometimes it's... sometimes I find it can be a little bit annoying when you visit.
I love it.
No, it's, I'm not talking about the grapes. Italian restaurants. Because you go to restaurants, and I think, you know, generally old world wine is maybe not as full bodied as what Australian wine is, for example, like a Shiraz. Yes. And so Australians are very used to drinking these big, bold wines.
And fruit driven too. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the Italians freak out a little bit because they don't understand that. And so when you order a really big wine, they don't want to give it to you because they don't think you're going to like it. So there's this little bit of, you know, we went to a restaurant when we were getting married, actually. And we just about had a fight with the guy over the bottle of wine we wanted to order because we wanted a Sagrantino. And he's saying, no, I don't think you're going to like it. I don't think it's appropriate. So sometimes you do have to argue for what you want. They will give you good advice, but also bear that in mind. So because it can be, you know, a difficult grape to approach. But when it's done right, we really like Sagrantino.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm a fan of red wines more than white wines. And Sagrantino is definitely on my top three. I really, really, really like it.
One that ages well, I guess, because of the big tannins.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Do they serve it aged at restaurants in Italy or do they serve it? Because that's the thing in Australia is often wines are very new. And they're also starting to make them to be served straight away.
Yeah.
Whereas Italy and I think the old world countries, they still age the wine.
It's really interesting you say that they definitely age the Sagrantino. However, speaking about how producers are starting to make wines that are, you know, meant to be served straight away, we're seeing that a lot in Italy too.
Oh,
and I think
because of
the rising temperatures with the weather and everything.
That's true. Yeah.
They're trying to combat that and try and produce a style that's a bit fresher and etc. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that continues to evolve.
Andrea, I just wanted to ask you said Sagrantino is in your top three favorite reds, and I'm assuming Barolo's up there, so what's the other one?
Good question.
Well, I think that the red wines from the south are very, very good, even if, as Liv was saying, sometimes they can be a bit too, because of the heat and the high temperatures, can be a bit too
quite alcoholic.
Yeah. So hard to approach. But like, for example, Primitivo, it's a very, very good wine. But again, it's not an everyday wine. It's not like an easy wine. You have to choose the right moment to have it with the right meal. But when it comes to red wine, I would go for these three. Of course, there are a lot of other good red wines, and it's very subjective. But mine, I would say it's Barolo or Nebbiolo based wines, Sagrantino, and Primitivo.
And the Primitivo is from Puglia, or whereabouts?
Correct. Puglia, Primitivo.
And if, in my opinion as well, you should look out for Primitivo di Manduria.
Exactly.
That's the area that you want to get the Primitivo from. Manduria is a little town in Puglia.
Yeah.
And they produce incredible Primitivo, also known as Zinfandel. That's the other name.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. I was going to say, because that's what America's famous for. But one of the other regions you were going to tell us about.
Yeah.
Tuscany.
When he was talking about red wine, I thought, oh gosh, you've forgotten Tuscany, because you love Tuscan wines too. I love Tuscan wines, and I think that's probably what most travelers or Italian wine drinkers are familiar with, like Chianti Classico. You know, it is that everyone loves Chianti Classico. I think it's really easy to drink. Obviously, you can get more full-bodied ones or the Reserva ones, which have been aged for longer and more important, but it's such an approachable wine. So it's made with 80% Sangiovese. Sangiovese is like Tuscany's, it's just about Italy's national grape, right?
I reckon,
the most planted grape in Italy, but specifically central Italy,
full
of Sangiovese. The Chianti is 80% Sangiovese, and then the other 20% can be a mix of other grapes.
I mean, it's a minimal of 80, but
sometimes they do 100%.
I didn't realize that. Right, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, what would be your favourite areas of Tuscany? Because Tuscany is a huge area. Like, we stayed down near Pienza, and that was like a two-hour drive from Florence.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know, we were chatting about this the other day, actually. I run tours as well with Untold Italy Tours, and we've got very food and wine-focused tours. And because Tuscany, as you say, is such a big region, we've actually split it, and we're doing two separate tours so that we can tackle both of the main wine regions. Even still, you know, we can't get to everything, coast or anything.
Yeah.
So Chianti would be one area that we really like, but probably our favorite is the Valdorcia near sure. where you stay.
Yes, it's beautiful. Yeah.
Beautiful place, Pienza.
It is beautiful. And that's where the Brunello di Montalcino comes from.
Oh, absolutely.
The Vino Nobili. Oh.
Vino Nobile di Montalcino, di Montepulciano, Rosso di Montalcino, yeah.
Yeah, and I just think there's a lot,
yeah.
you know, besides just the wine too, there's a lot to do there as well. There's the hot springs, lots of hilltop towns, there's, you know, the cheese, the pecorino.
The oil.
The olive oil. Yeah, and it's very close to Siena. It's a lot closer to Siena than Florence. Yeah. So Siena. Amazing medieval city to visit as well. So yeah, I really like that area. But then of course there's along the coast, because a lot of people don't realize that Tuscany is, you know, on the coast too.
Yeah.
The Maremma area makes some really delicious wines and white wines there.
Oh, right.
So even though Tuscany is, you know, red wine country too, they do also make white wines, and then there's Super Tuscans. I mean, there's a lot.
There's lots of tagline in Tuscany, but
so Super Tuscan, that is that French varieties in Italy, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's when they use like the Syrah grapes or Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah, exactly.
Still normally with a base of Sangiovese, but yeah, it's like a real, I think Australians really like Super Tuscans as well, because maybe they're a little bit more familiar with those grapes too. Like we get a lot of French grapes in Australia. But yeah, Super Tuscans are really interesting.
They became also very popular internationally.
I think they're really approachable for an international palate, like an Australian or an American palate. They just feel a little bit more familiar, maybe.
Would you like to tell us more about the tours that you're operating or that you're doing?
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, so we run small group tours. Untold Italy is the company, and I host many of them. We've got one in Piedmont. So we do two nights in Turin and two nights in the Lange wine region. And the tour in fall is really special because we also go to the White Truffle Festival as white truffles are in season. That's really, that's really nice. Then we run tours in Umbria. So we've got a week-long tour in Umbria. We start in Rome. We go up to Orvieto, try some wine there, and then go into like Montefalco, Sagrantino land. And it's not just wine, you know, there's a lot of sightseeing and special local craftspeople that we meet, local families too that we meet. So you get a local connection that might be hard to have if you're not with a tour group. We do a tour in Puglia, so we do wine tasting down south for a totally different view, a lot of beautiful different landscapes along the Adriatic coast, but also inland in the Itria Valley, where, you know, it's just so in contrast to Piedmont, Puglia. It's, well, first of all, Piedmont's mountains, very green, rolling hills. There's always this nebbia or the fog, which kind of creates a magical atmosphere. Down in Puglia, it's like flat, red, deep earth. It's full of iron. Then you've got the sea, obviously. So that's, anyway, it's really beautiful.
Landscape.
Yeah. And then we also have a tour. We've got two tours in Sicily because it's so big. So we do the West Coast and the East Coast. And visit lots of wineries there. So the East Coast is, you know, more Greek with Mount Etna. And so we do wine tasting on Etna, which is,
That sounds cool. You know,
we didn't even talk about Sicily wines. They are amazing. That soil is, supercharged.
So what's your pick of Sicilian wines? Is it, because I've heard of like the rosés are popular there.
The rosé is really delicious too. I love it. Honestly, I love anything that's grown on Etna. So be that white or red, I love Etna wines.
That soil is magical.
Yeah,
we tried both.
We tried a lot. What else do we really like? We holidayed last year in Salina, which is an island off the coast of, it's part of Sicily, but just off the coast of Sicily in the Aeolian Islands. Yeah. A lot of Australians visit.
Full of Australians, more Australians than Italians.
Australians are everywhere. You can't escape.
It was nice.
It was nice. And Salina, you know, we chose Salina besides the fact that it was beautiful because of the wine, because they grow the Malvasia grape there in Salina. And so that's a white wine. And we visited some wineries there, and look, it It's probably not going to make it to my top five grapes or whatever, but it was really nice and really, yeah, it's just interesting because, I mean, so, talking about Australians, I think a lot of the reason why Australians were there was because of the, you know, discovering their family history and heritage from that island. It was always their main source of, you know, their main economy was wine driven. And then during the Phylloxera years where, you know, the wine
was destroyed,
the grapes were all destroyed by this bug, everyone lost their livelihoods and migrated to places like America or Australia.
Yeah.
And so now they've really restarted the wine industry there.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to go
and
visit.
Wow, that's super interesting.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, Sicily is just full of incredible wines. Nero d'Avola, which is a big red. Love Nero d'Avola.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
There's a lot. So, yes, we do a lot of wine tasting in Sicily and, you know, a lot of sightseeing there. And then we also have a tour
in Liguria.
Yeah, so we didn't talk about Liguria, but their famous wine is Vermentino. So, as you can imagine, they're right on the coast. So it's a very mineral, citrus fruits, grapefruit.
Yeah.
Like it's, I really like Vermentino wine. And there's some cool producers there too. So, and a lot of fish. So, we just, you know, it all goes together. Pesto. But yeah, for the Liguria tour, we're mainly in, so we start in the capital, Genova, which is a beautiful port town. Well, when I say beautiful, it's beautiful because it's full of all these noble old residences and that kind of thing. And then we head out to Alassio. So you can describe better. He used to holiday in Alassio when he was a kid all the time.
Wow. It's a cool summer spot if you live in Torino because it's quite close from Piedmont. It's in the northwest part of Italy, Liguria as well.
From the Cinque Terre, where's Alassio?
Alassio is on the west part of Liguria, while Cinque Terre is more on the east side. And it's a tiny little town, very, very nice, very friendly as well. I would visit, it's definitely interesting to see.
Yeah, the thing I think as well interesting about Liguria and their wine production and just everything, their food production, is that it is such a long, thin, narrow region.
Yeah.
And oh god, it must be an absolute pain in the ass doing, you know, any agricultural work. They call it heroic winemaking, because you cannot use machinery there. It's just too steep, everything is hand-picked. But on the plus side, I mean, that all means the quality is amazing because they're making a small quantity. Everything handmade, so the quality can be really high.
They have these beautiful, you can see sometimes along these steep hills, they have these rails that you don't understand what they are because they're too tiny for humans, because sometimes they just put the basket full of the grapes when they harvest it, and with these rails they just
monorails.
Yes,
I saw them there. It was astounding. It was fantastic to see.
It is a beautiful region, and I think, smaller quantities.
And if you like also whites and sweet wine, there's the Chacatra that we tried.
Yeah.
It's a white sweet wine, perfect for dessert, for example. And if you go to the Cinque Terre, you would definitely find it. There are wineries that produce it.
So it's called Chacatra.
It's a bit of a hidden gem, but
it's extremely expensive because it's produced in such small quantities, but it's an experience, isn't it?
You've got to, you know, it's the only place in the world that makes it, and it's so unique.
Absolutely. But there's, you know, there's so much wine tasting. I mean, every region in Italy produces wine and they've got the most grape varieties in the entire world. So I just think it's endless, the discoveries, you know.
Every region has its little things to discover, little wines.
Yeah.
Just waiting to be found.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. We're all inspired. Thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And
Well, thank you. It was really nice to talk and to meet. And thank you for inviting us on the podcast.
Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe now to get each episode as they drop. You can also check out this podcast on YouTube and see pictures of the region and the people I've spoken to. Go to winedelust.com.au, that's winederlust.com.au, for everything discussed today. You can also subscribe to my newsletter to hear all about my upcoming events and other news. Till next time, happy wine travels. Yeah. Yeah.